Big show for you today. Boone June hits full swing. I'm taking over hosting duties from Harmon while he's out on vacation, and we've lined up some amazing guests for the next couple weeks, starting today with JJ Zacharyson and Mr. Late Round Quarterback himself. He's going to help us as we continue our Flip the Script series. This time, we're taking a look at who could be this year's Drake May. So a quarterback who's currently going outside of the top 12 QBs in ADP, but who might just be able to finish inside the top five at the position when it's all said and done. We also talked through some general quarterback draft strategy, including a little bit of super flex discussion, which I know you'll love. Tons of great stuff coming your way. Let's get to it. What is up, everybody? Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast. I'm Justin Boone, stepping into the host chair this week. I am filling in for Matt Harmon, who is on, let's face it, a well-deserved vacation. We basically had to pry him away from his desk, get him out into the world. Based on some of the pictures I've seen so far, it looks like he is definitely enjoying himself. I also hope that he's using some of that sunscreen that he recommended for me on last week's show, because yes, we are not just a fantasy football show. We also give skincare advice. Apparently, I had a bunch of people message me about that. I think Harmon did too. But this week, we are moving forward. It is still a hell of a day to talk ball. And while Harmon is out here, I have called in some favors, got some of the best analysts in the industry joining me over the next couple of weeks. And that begins today with one of the top minds in the industry, one of my favorites, JJ Zacharyson of lateround.com. JJ, how you doing, man? How you been?
I'm good, man. It's good to see your smiling face. You know, I don't think we've had a show together this offseason. So good to see you, man.
We did about what, like a decade's worth of annual shows. We didn't have one, I don't think, last year, and of course not this year. We did get to see each other and meet in Canton last year the Fantasy Expo, which was awesome. We got to have a chat in person. And I can confirm, everyone, we all know JJ's work is excellent. Also, just an awesome dude. Just love how he carries himself. Just a great guy and a friend of the show, of course. I don't think this is your first time on the show here.
Yes. I mean, I'd say very good things about you. I won't say the same about Matthew Harmon.
Of course. How dare he leave us here as the football season is approaching. Yeah. What a jerk that guy is. I hope he's listening. Harmon, we'll be fine without you, buddy. Enjoy yourself. Come back rested, and we will do it all up this summer. But JJ, we've got a lot to talk about on the show today. We're going to go over the quarterback position. We're continuing our Flip the Script series. We looked last week at the next George Pickens. I think we landed on a very good name. If you didn't listen to that show, go back, check that one out. This time around, we are trying to identify this year's Drake May. And we say this every episode in this series. There probably won't be a guy that's exactly the George Pickens or the Drake May. People talk like this every year, but it's a fun exercise to do just to kind of talk through some of the candidates and figure out how we feel about them and who we could potentially go after and who might have a chance to have similar success, right? And for May last year, it was going from being a quarterback taken outside of the top 12 at his position to finishing as the second highest scoring fantasy quarterback overall by the end of the season, the third highest scoring when you're looking at fantasy points per game, which is what I normally look at when we're talking about that sort of stuff. I think that's a little more predictive and a little more accurate. It's probably not going to happen exactly like it did for May for any of these guys, but I do think some of the guys we're going to talk about today have a really good chance to have great fantasy seasons. And I don't know about you, JJ, but for a couple of years, it seemed like the market had kind of figured out the late round quarterback thing. Like, I remember the year that Jalen Hurts was going to be that next guy and ended up being the guy. And his ADP just was driven up to the point where he wasn't even a late round quarterback that year, right? Everybody was on to him. And that kind of made me, for at least a couple seasons, lean a little more towards like elite quarterback, not be scared to say, take some of the top guys like, you know, Josh Allen or Lamar Jackson or whatnot. But this year, I kind of think there's a lot of quality options in the late round area. I don't know about you, but I think, you know, we had Jaden Daniels a couple years ago. He popped off. We had May last year. I think we could certainly get someone else from that range turning out to be a very good fantasy starter this year. Do you feel the same?
Yeah. You know, like I think that when you look at the late round quarterback strategy and what we've seen over the last, I don't know, 5 or 6 years, there have been years where you know, it made sense, especially in hindsight, to go that direction at the quarterback position. I always say that if you're going to get a quarterback early, make sure you're doing so in an environment where, you know, there are fewer teams that you're playing against, like, you know, like an 18 or 10 team league, as opposed to like a 16 team league, because that opportunity cost is a lot easier to take on, you know, if you're in a shallower league.
For sure.
So that's one way where you can get your exposure to Josh Allen and such, where, you know, if you're in an 8-team league, you need your lineup to be optimal. It needs to be great all over that lineup. And so it's a little bit easier to take that on. But when you look at the landscape this year, I think it's a fairly obvious year to kind of wait on the position. And the reason for that is because we've gotten really good dual threat quarterbacks entering the mold and entering the player pool, if you will, over the last few years. You know, Jaden Daniels came in a couple years ago, and obviously, you know, last year was injury filled, and he wasn't able to live up to expectation. But he's seemingly back and healthy. Obviously, Drake May, Caleb Williams. You know, there's players that just have entered that have legit passing upside because of their environments and just who they are. But also, the rushing upside is there, which, you know, for at this point, I think the majority of people, especially if you're listening in June, you know, you're more of a diehard than the average fantasy manager. You know the importance of quarterback rushing in fantasy football, right? And that's really what we, you know, are attracted to and aiming towards getting, you know, in this landscape, is the guys who are dual threat and are able to, you know, give you points. You know, I think that folks kind of misinterpret what that means from a fantasy perspective. It's really that the rushing production gives a player a floor, and it's the passing that gives that player the ceiling. You know, it's the fact that Lamar Jackson would be a great fantasy asset, but it's when he has those monster seasons through the air where he's an insane fantasy asset, right? Like, we were drafting mobile quarterbacks back in like the 2013 to 2016 range in the late rounds. Yep. Who were horrible passers. I mean, we're talking like we were excited about Terrell Pryor as a quarterback, right? Or Tim Tebow.
There might be
right?
one of those this year. I don't want to spoil it. There might be one of those this year that we talk about a little bit later. Yeah.
Yeah. But we have unicorns now. We have guys like Josh Allen and even Jalen Hurts. Like, Hurts has put up way better passing numbers than most mobile quarterbacks did back in the day. And, you know, even when you look at like a Cam Newton from 10 years ago, his best seasons came whenever he gave you that extra juice through the air. So I think that's one thing to keep in mind, is that when you're looking at these mobile quarterbacks specifically late, there's a lot of data to suggest that late round quarterbacks who are mobile, right? And you can look at previous season rushing points per game if you want to kind of get an idea of if they're mobile or not. Those players historically have performed just as well as top six immobile quarterbacks. So if you get a late round, I'm talking like after QB12 quarterback who's mobile, he outperforms slash is just as good as a top six quarterback who's immobile. So keep that in mind, you know, as we're going through all these late round picks, because it's a very, very important aspect of these guys' game.
I also think it's important to, and most people I think at this point do it, most fantasy managers, is like separating real life from fantasy when it comes to fantasy quarterbacks and the mobile quarterbacks. It's really important. And I'm sure we'll get to this when we talk about that specific player a little later. But yes, the rushing thing, the guy could basically be a bad QB, but if the rushing is there, you can pretty much play him normally, and the production will be enough that they could sneak into potentially the top 12 and be that fantasy starter for you. Now, that's for one quarterback leagues, which obviously is like the standard. That's what most people play. I don't know about you, JJ. I get a ton of questions about two quarterback, about super flex, and it's probably because I actually don't put out super flex rankings for redraft. I do it for dynasty. I think there's value in that. I have my dynasty trade value charts. Of course, I have it there. When it comes to redraft, though, I don't really find the value in it, because for me, when I go into a super flex draft, I've seen it vary so much, right? You could go into a super flex draft and there's like 8 to 10 quarterbacks that go off the board, maybe more in the first round or two. And you go into some others and it's the complete opposite. And you might see guys bump up, you know, a round ahead of their normal ADP in one QB leagues, but a lot of people wait on them in those. So because it varies so much, I don't want to put out a set ranking for Superflex and have people just follow that and go with that and miss out on all the value. I want them to kind of figure out and adapt on the fly. Do you feel the same? I don't even know. Do you put out Superflex? You might actually put out Superflex rankings, but I want people to adapt on the fly, to always use my quarterback rankings as that guide. But still, you got to figure out where the values and where the pockets you can attack are in these drafts.
Yeah, I mean, it's against my will. I wish I didn't have to do the Superflex rankings, but people have asked me so frequently to do them that I do them. But I agree with you wholeheartedly. I've been, I talk about this with, you know, members and subscribers all the time, that your individual Superflex draft is going to look very, very different than someone else's Superflex draft, right? I can give you a general idea of where things might go and might be headed, but I don't think that's nearly as useful as kind of understanding the ebbs and flows of those drafts and how to really attack and find the values and the pockets of value, as you know, as you were noting. So I think it is different in Dynasty, because in Dynasty, we are worried about the market component, right? Like that's the piece that, you know, like we care about where quarterbacks are being ranked in Dynasty, because we not only want production from that player, but we want the value within the market of that player. We want to see how other people are valuing that guy, so we know that we can either flip him or see where, you know, things rise and fall from that perspective, not just a production standpoint. But in redraft, I mean, we're really just drafting and we're worried about just this one year. And so the value component really isn't nearly as important. So I do Superflex rankings. I hate doing Superflex rankings for all of these, you know, reasons that we're talking about.
Yeah, and there are a lot of different strategies, a lot of the same ones that we can apply to other positions. You can go with a hero QB approach in Superflex. You can double dip early at the position. You know, you can go with a zero QB approach, which based on what we're talking about today, you might be able to even pull that off this year and do it very well. But I don't think you should lock yourself into almost any strategy when you're entering drafts. And that goes for Dynasty and for redraft, right? Just go in, figure the room out as you go, and build and find the values along the way. I think that's the smartest way to play. I think sometimes people spend too much time worrying about it beforehand. They have this one set strategy that they want to employ, and then you go into the room, the board just breaks a completely different way, and next thing you know, you are losing out on a ton of value here and there, and you might get caught at the end of a bunch of runs and that sort of thing. So for me, I'm adapting on the fly. It sounds like you're the same, and I think that's the best way to go. But I agree with you in Dynasty. I normally build my teams around quarterback and receiver in Dynasty, and we're talking about Superflex, because I just feel like you get the most runway with those guys. And then I can kind of fill in tight end. I always find values at tight end in Dynasty. And then running back, you can sort of, if you get lucky, if you hit on somebody, great. But if not, you can go buy that value. You can go buy the older veteran guys and try to use them to help you get over the top when you're a contender. At least that's normally, I do have some shares of Bijan Robinson and some other guys, don't get me wrong. But still, I think in general, that's normally my approach with Dynasty, is trying to get those quarterbacks locked down, trying to get a couple solid young receivers that I can keep for a while, and then go from there. How about yourself?
Yeah, I mean, look, to me, strategy is about flexibility. It's not about just like taking whatever that strategy is and deploying it and using it no matter what, right? It's about when you understand the various ways you can attack a fantasy draft, that means that when the draft is going down, you're able to be flexible and really extract as much value as you possibly can, right? It goes for literally any strategy that we talk about, whether it's zero RB, hero RB, you know, hero QB. I do think that if you were to kind of take the middle of the road approach here, the safest approach, it would be more of that like hero QB approach, because what you're doing in doing that is you're at least getting some stability at your QB one spot. And then you can just kind of play what the market's doing for your QB2 spot and attack when you need to attack. And then, you know, get a couple of guys really late and stream them, you know, via your bench, obviously not the waiver wire, but just play by matchups and such. And that way, because like what you run into is if you go very heavy quarterback in a super flex redraft league, you run into the scary thing that can happen where the rest of your league ends up waiting, and then you're just devaluing those early round quarterback picks that you ended up taking. But then obviously if you go late QB, then you could just be screwed because everyone's taking their third quarterback before you're taking your first, you know? So I think the easiest like middle of the road, if you want a strategy that will be safe, you know, that will probably be fine, it would be like a hero quarterback where you're getting one in the first couple rounds and you get someone that's very stable, you know, even if it's like a Brock Purdy type, you know, just someone who's like fine. And we feel good about him being like a low end QB one, you know, most seasons. And then with your QB2 spot, that's where you're just throwing a handful of darts or a couple of darts to play by matchup each week.
I agree. And I promised everybody we're going to get to some of these deeper quarterback picks. We're going to talk about a bunch of these candidates who could be the next Drake May. But quickly, I want to hit on Drake May and what he did last season, and maybe lessons that we could learn from that we could apply to some of these undervalued quarterbacks in 2026? Was there anything specific to May that you think fantasy managers should note going into this year when they're trying to nail down that late round quarterback that they might draft?
Yeah, I mean, look, I said it at the top where mobility is just incredibly important. And if you know that there's going to be some mobility from a quarterback, then he should at least be on your radar as a later round pick. But then on top of that, you know, some of the trends that I've looked at for my draft guide every year, one of them this past year that I really dug into, and I do it every year, but it was like more obvious last year, just given the class from the previous season. Year two quarterbacks are generally good bets to give us upside. Now, the one caveat with that is that they also give us a lot of downside. Okay, so it's a highly volatile career year for these quarterbacks, where, in my opinion, though, when we're looking at single quarterback leagues, we should only be chasing upside in the late rounds. You know, obviously, you should just be chasing upside in the late rounds for any position. But if you're in a super flex league, it's a little bit different if you're spending a fourth or a fifth round pick where the opportunity cost is going to be more significant on a more volatile year two player. It's a little bit of a different kind of like a thing to think about and formula to walk through, right? But generally speaking, if you're looking at players who exceed, so I look at average draft position expectation. So every player at a certain ADP, based on what's happened historically, has some sort of expected points per game at that pick, right? And if you look at year two quarterbacks, they exceed that expected points per game by two or more and four or more points better than any other career year. So they're doing it at the highest rate, but they're also underperforming by 4 and 2 points per game at the highest rate. So you're looking at a situation where, and last year, I think, is like the best example where you have Drake May and JJ McCarthy, right? Where it's like, like you can get really excited. Like you see the upside with Drake May, and then you see how it can go south with a player like JJ McCarthy. That was just an easier example because last year's class was so good, right? Or 2 years ago's class was so good for those year two guys. Most years it's not going to be as obvious and as interesting and fun. You know, Caleb obviously last year took a step, and you know, we were hoping probably a little bit more from Bo Nix. Obviously, Jaden Daniels gets hurt, but again, the downside exists with JJ McCarthy. I think most years you won't even see as much upside as we got from last year's class, but that's certainly something that you should be looking at, is just where they are in their career, because the market itself hates ambiguity. The market cannot stand when they don't know, when a fantasy manager hates when they don't have concrete information about a player. But that's when we should really pounce. That's when we should be going after, especially in the late rounds, because there's a decreased cost with those players when the market's like, nah, I'm not going to go after this guy because I don't know anything about him. Well, that's when we should be going after them, because their costs are a lot cheaper.
Yeah, I might have been left with a few JJ McCarthy shares last year after buying into that offense. And what they had done with some veteran quarterbacks in the past. And yeah, unfortunately, that one didn't come through, but May did. And now this year, I mean, are you even more excited about him this year? Do you think there's a chance that he could take a step back? I mean, getting AJ Brown, getting Romeo Doubs, like by all accounts, it kind of seems like his situation's even better this year.
So it's really interesting going back to the ADP expectation stuff. If you look at touchdown rate, which is one of the most easy to understand metrics out there, just touchdowns divided by attempts, how frequently a player is scoring a touchdown, you know, on the number of passes he's throwing. Drake May last year had a 6.3% touchdown rate, which is actually pretty significant. Like it's not, you know, anything over 6, you generally expect regression the following year. You know, there are going to be players that are just really good slash they're in the right ecosystem, like a Brock Purdy who kind of just beats this, you know, year over year for the most part. But I don't think you can make that assumption for most players. So the assumption going in should probably be that Drake May is not going to see as high of a touchdown rate as he did last year, but it should still be pretty significant. Now, the very interesting part about touchdown rate is that when you look at ADP expectation, it's actually the players who have low touchdown rates the previous season who outperform expectation, and then the players who had high touchdown rates the previous season, they underperform versus expectation. And the reason for that is a player is coming off a really big touchdown season, and fantasy managers are like, yeah, sure, I'll draft him as a top 6 quarterback because he was really good last year. Well, touchdowns regress, right? And that's why they have higher costs, and so it's harder for that player to really exceed expectation in general. It's the guys who are lower down the list because they had a little, they were just unlucky the previous season with how they ended up scoring their touchdowns. The one thing that can combat that is the rushing stuff, right? And he has that. He's giving and generating a good number of points per game via the rush and via his legs, and that's going to be able to combat any of that touchdown rate regression more than likely. And then on top of that, I think he's just going to throw the ball a little bit more. Like the Patriots likely, you know, won't have as clean of game scripts as they had last year. They have better personnel to be able to throw the ball a little bit more. So I think that can help also. You know, we saw that a little bit with like Jared Goff last year to a degree. I mean, Goff still saw like a 2 point per game drop in his points per game last year, and that was coming because of touchdown rate. You could literally just look at that metric and see that coming. But his touchdown rate was still like not bad, but it was lower, but he threw the ball more, and that was helpful for him to combat the obvious regression that was coming. So even if Drake May maybe sees like a 5.5% touchdown rate, which would be higher than league average and still really, really strong, you know, given the fact that he got AJ Brown and that, you know, it's another year in this system and we feel better about it. I do think that he can combat all of this, and he should still be a pretty firm top five quarterback, just given what we saw last year, what we know he can do and the weapons around him.
I agree. And I think it's interesting because there's like a lot of quarterbacks in my mind that would be kind of in that sort of tier with him. Like I could see Jaden Daniels coming back and having like a monster season and getting back closer to what he did 2 years ago. Joe Burrow's always in the mix as long as he could stay healthy. I think Justin Herbert's in position to really blow up this season based on all the moves that they've made for the Chargers offense. Jalen Hurts, even though he's losing AJ Brown, we know he has the rushing upside. They've brought in some other guys. Like, I think I could make a pretty strong case for all of those guys, but you could even make a case in my mind for like what I would say like the next tier below them. Like, would it shock you if Caleb Williams takes another step forward? If a guy like Jackson Dart blows up, we saw him do it for stretches, and we're going to talk about him a little later, not to spoil that. But, you know, Dak Prescott has shown us that he could be a top five, top six fantasy quarterback. Trevor Lawrence last season ended the year so strong. So did Brock Purdy. You know, Bo Nix kind of hovering in that low end QB1 fantasy range. Can he take a step forward now that they have Jalen Waddle? They're like, there are a ton of quality quarterbacks when you're looking at the top 12, top 15. And I think it goes even further than that. So I am very comfortable waiting on quarterback this year. And that's kind of what we're going to talk about today. But we got to take our first break here. When we come back, we're finally going to go over these candidates to be this year's Drake May right after this. We are back with JJ Zacharias in TheLateRound.com, and it is finally time to discuss who could be this year's Drake May in fantasy. So welcome to Flip the Script. And just to go over the criteria again here, this needs to be a quarterback currently going outside of QB1 territory. So I normally consider that the top 12. We're going to cheat a little bit today and say the top 10 because I wanted to sneak a couple other guys in there that are just outside of that. But it's fine. This is our show. We can do whatever we want. Harmon's not here, JJ. We can basically set any rules that we want for this one. The goal here, though, is we just want to tell a story, right? We just want to figure out, can they become an elite fantasy option and be drafted where they're going very, very late at the moment? And for May last year, he was the QB16 in preseason ADP. But like we said off the top, he finished as the QB2 overall and the QB3 in fantasy points per game. It was a great season for him. By all accounts, it was a great season, except for the fact they didn't win the Super Bowl, but they made it there. I don't know if we're going to find somebody on this list that has similar success, but you know, we want a guy who's going to go from being essentially like a not entirely known commodity to being, you know, tabbed as that like ascending quarterback. And for this exercise, you know, we're going to discuss a bunch of players here. I think based on the criteria, we can throw out players like Brock Purdy, Matthew Stafford, Jared Goff. I think Jordan Love, they've all had pretty good seasons within the last couple of years. So I don't think we need to consider them for this. You know, they're not really going to be the next Drake May. But let's dive into some of the other options here, JJ. And the first name is another one that's probably too obvious. We already brought him up a little bit earlier, but I figure we should mention him off the top. And that's Bo Nix. He was the QB10 of fantasy points per game during that rookie year. I think he surprised a lot of people, including myself. I had to move on from my pre-draft takes on him, which weren't that I thought he was going to be that good as a rookie. Then he comes back the sophomore year. You figure maybe they'll figure him out. They do not. QB8 last year. And yeah, it hasn't necessarily always been pretty, but for fantasy, he has been good. Now he gets Jalen Waddle added to that wide receiver core, and yet his ADP, JJ, is still quarterback 15. Can you make sense of that?
I think it's just competition at the position. You know, like I am higher, you know, than that mark, but I do think that a lot of it comes down to what we've been saying all show, is that there's just so many good quarterbacks to choose from, and someone's got to be ranked somewhere, you know, and that's just where he ends up falling. I'll also say that I was a little bit disappointed that we didn't see a little bit more rushing production from him last year. You know, just a little bit more would have given me a little bit more comfort about him year over year. You know, the Broncos are also like, they threw the ball a lot last year. And I wonder if that comes down slightly just based on, I know that the common, you know, theme and the way that people think about this is like, how would it possibly come down if they add Jalen Waddle? Well, it's just the way that regression and math generally works and the way the game scripts work. So there is a little bit of that. But if we're looking at this objectively, I think Bo Nix is a player who has a very real shot to outperform ADP, to jump a tier or two. Do I think that he's going to end up being a top six option? Generally, when we see those kinds of jumps, it's either an outlier touchdown rate season, like we saw with Matthew Stafford last year, where it's just like almost impossible for that to repeat year over year. So that can happen with, you know, more of a pocket passer, or it's someone, like I said earlier, you know, with Drake May, we had no idea what that player was about. We do have 2 years of Bo Nix now, not to say that that's a ton of time for him to for us to know exactly who he is, but it's more than, you know, what we see from those like really, really massive jumps. I'm giving you the bear case more so, but I do think that is what the bear case would say with a player like Nix. The environment's really, really good for him. Obviously, we feel pretty comfortable about the coaching staff and what the offense should be able to do. So I think he's a really solid pick. I just think that there's actually some other higher upside, if you're only looking at upside players, that we might be able to get late this year.
I guess there's also the injury situation, kind of the weird injury at the end of last year. I think he's going to be fine. True. I haven't really been too worried about that, but something else that we'll keep an eye on here throughout the summer to make sure that that's not going to slow him down at all or potentially impact any sort of rushing upside that he could have, anything like that. So would you agree? I don't think he belongs really as one of the candidates, one of the finalists here to be this year's Drake May, but he's somebody that I definitely think we should mention just because where his ADP is sitting there.
Yeah, and look, I think that because we were talking about Superflex earlier, like he's a great Superflex pick because he's someone Absolutely. That I think will beat ADP, and then you have the comfort in knowing that he's likely not going to like lose his job or anything. Whereas there are some other guys that I think in single quarterback leagues have that like higher upside, but there is a risk that it can just go so far south that you're streaming because they don't have their jobs anymore.
All right, so after Nix, we're going to get into the sophomore quarterbacks here, and I quite like this group, JJ. I think it's very intriguing. We're looking at Jackson Dart, who's the QB12 in ADP, Tyler Shuck, the QB19, and Cam Ward, the QB22. Let's start with Jackson Dart. I already said a little bit earlier, he's somebody that I'm interested in. He's somebody that I'm already looking at as like a low-end QB1 who I think has some upside, though. It's not guaranteed by any means. A lot of changes in New York this offseason. What expectations do you have for him after we saw some good things, but you know, we could see we need some improvement for sure based on what we saw from him as a rookie.
I think the fear that I have with Dart, and I like Dart. I mean, I hope that this fear doesn't come to fruition for my dynasty leagues, but with Dart, the fear is that he's not throwing himself around like he did last year, and that new coaching staff, you know, brand new coaching staff, new coordinator. Like this is a scenario where they really bring it back, given the fact that he was banged up last year multiple times. They bring it back a little bit, and they're able to coach him in a way where, you know, they are relying, you know, they don't care about how much he's running from a fantasy perspective. They would want him to just do it in a smarter way from a real football perspective, you know, an EPA perspective, extending drives perspective, etc. And so my fear with Dart is that, like, I think he's a solid pick because if this doesn't change, I mean, the dude was averaging a ton of points per game via rushing last year, and it's something that we only see from, like, nowadays we see it from, like, 4 or 5 quarterbacks a year, but typically, you know, 5 years ago, we would only see it from, like, 1 or 2 quarterbacks per year in terms of how many rushing points per game he was generating. If we just see that continue, that's amazing, and he's gonna blow by where he's being drafted right now, which is, again, why I think he's one of those, like, yeah, if he falls in a draft, or if there's, you know, people are just bearish because of the injury stuff or what have you, then he's a great single quarterback pick because of that, right? Because we're only shooting for upside. We're only worried about that upside. I just, you know, again, if I were, so I think that from that perspective, second year guy, mobility, what if he takes a step forward as a passer? That's the Drake May mold, right? Like that makes a ton of sense. But I do, just from an analysis standpoint, I think that we should be concerned that they bring it in a little bit and he's not as wild and crazy as he was when he first got that gig.
I think from like a designed run standpoint, I think that's almost guaranteed that they probably will. Like they were kind of setting him out there and just like letting him run wild. But I wonder, like, to me, he just seems like a gamer. And I know that's not like great analysis, but I've even seen some of the beat writers mention that in practice, in OTAs right now, they've had a very quick whistle where some of the passing plays break down. And in games, that's when Dart would have just taken off with the ball on his own to make a play. And yet they don't want him doing that in practice. There's not a lot of tackling or anything going on this time of year, so he's not at huge risk, but that they're blowing those plays dead, that people in practice aren't seeing him kind of take off for these runs and pick up yards that way. And yet when the games start, I think he just naturally is going to make plays and do that because that's in his bag. So for me, I'm really excited about him. We mentioned kind of what he did last year. Like from the time he took over as starter in week four, he was the QB 8 in fantasy points per game. He averaged over 20 fantasy points per game. He also had top 12 finishes in 7 of his last 11 games on the season. So he was producing at that level over a large chunk of the season already. And there's a couple guys that we're going to talk about that kind of have a bit of a history already of showing us at least that they could be a top 12 quarterback. I really like that aspect of it when we're not just completely projecting a guy out of nowhere, which, let's face it, maybe that's a lesson that I learned from JJ McCarthy last year when I made a bold prediction about him. But yeah, having a guy who just has never done it, but you look at the environment and you look at what you think the talent's going to be and what that could become versus some of these guys that we're talking about right now that have actually shown us that they can do it over a stretch of time. So I have him as my QB 9 overall. Like we said, he's being drafted at QB 12. I think you're getting some value there. And even if Malik Nabers isn't ready at the start of the season, which right now I'm projecting it as he's not going to be, I've changed my projections in that respect. They've brought in a bunch of guys, and I think Dart is more than capable of kind of lifting up that offense, spreading the ball around. Of course, new coaching staff, he's going to have to get used to that, but they have a little more talent there. And then eventually when Nabers does come back, even if he's not 100%, you add him to that mix. And I continue to tell people, like, when Dart did this last year, Nabers was basically hurt the whole time. Like, he wasn't out there inflating Dart's production. So it will be great to see them hopefully on the field together and healthy at some point this season and producing.
Yeah, totally agree.
And also, I mean, his best buddy, Cam Scataboo, it would be nice to see Scataboo out there. He was only there for part of the year last year, and he adds something to the passing attack as well. So that would be exciting. I also do my strength of schedule matrix every year, and you can look at Dart last year having the worst fantasy quarterback slate to this season, the 7th easiest. So that's just kind of another little data point that I would add towards me really liking him this season. What about Tyler Shuck? And I will say, JJ, I will give Harmon props. He was early on the Tyler Shuck bandwagon last year, not from the pre-draft period, but during the season when we saw him start, when we saw him actually start to produce and have some good games. Harmon was very quick to recognize the things he was doing well and then kind of brought me along. Now we are both on that hype train. What do you think about Tyler Shuck? Could he be that Drake May type guy this year?
I think if you're looking at the... You know, I guess Dart technically as the sophomore quarterback is the easier bet, but he's also going a lot earlier than where Tyler Shuck is going. You know, if you're really looking for a late round option, it's really hard to not go after Shuck and to look at Shuck as just like a very obvious place to start, right? In a Kellen Moore offense that pushes the pace. Kellen Moore offenses continuously rank in the top 5 in plays per game year in and year out, even when you adjust for game script. So it's going to be a fast-paced offense. Even if they want to be run-heavy, number one, they might not be able to just based on game script. But number two, even if they are relatively run-heavy from like a pass rate over expected standpoint, they're not going to be like it's still going to give us enough volume just based on the pace of play that Kellen Moore runs with. Right? They go out, they add Jordan Tyson, who I think works very, very well with Chris Olave. I think Tyson can be a very good underneath, you know, zone beater. And Olave has been great against man and getting down the field throughout his career. So that meshes really well together. Juwan Johnson's been obviously a pretty solid pass catching tight end. Devon Vele works well in the slot. You know, I think that he's at least a solid enough player there. And then they add Travis Etienne or Achan, however you want to say it, you know, this offseason. So it's a good ecosystem for him to be in. And then you look at last season, he finishes a top 12 quarterback, a QB1 in half of his games. Like he was fantastic from a fantasy perspective. Some of the stuff, not amazingly sustainable, but like he's giving us rushing production, which is what we want. Like I remember that game against Tampa Bay last year where he had a couple of rushing scores. Like there's definitely that upside. And then if he takes a step forward as a passer, I mean, the things that I'm saying right now are not unlike what we were saying about Drake May last year, where you have this really clean rushing floor and you're just waiting for them to take a step forward as a passer. And when you look in the context of rookie season passing numbers, what Tyler Shuck did last year was not bad at all. You know, it really wasn't, you know, it wasn't great within the context of every NFL quarterback, but you got to look at him as a rookie and say, wow, this really wasn't that bad. I think the fear with Shuck is that obviously he's an older prospect and will that development really come and move forward? Whereas May last year had the opposite, right? Where it was just like a toolsy thing. Like we felt really optimistic about him moving forward and progressing in his career. Tyler Shuck might not be there because he's already, you know, the age of some veteran quarterbacks. So I think that would be the downside. But given the ecosystem and what he's working with, I think he's a great pick right now.
Yeah, Tyler Shuck might be dealing with like the Bo Nix kind of thing, where in general, I think a lot of the community might still think about how they felt about that player pre-draft and hasn't really adapted to kind of what the situation is now, where we've seen the production, we've seen them actually show that they appear to be a decent NFL starting quarterback. I think Shuck still has a ways to go with that. Nix has shown us a little more over the two seasons, but you mentioned it. He averaged the 12th most fantasy points per game during those 9 starts. Like, he can be a usable fantasy option. Would I rather have him as a QB2 super flex guy? Of course. But I think there's a chance we could see him sneak into that top 12. Maybe not top 10. That might be a little bit rich for my liking, but I think there is a higher ceiling there. Still have a ways to go, but the environment for him, you went over it, all the additions that they've made there, the coaching staff, how fast they play. It's setting up in my mind for him to outproduce. QB19 seems very low in my mind. I have him a few spots higher in my rankings, and I could really see a path towards him becoming a lot better in fantasy. What about Cam Ward? This is the one that like I'm kind of hung up on a little bit. And, you know, first overall pick last year, I think expectations were high. And he comes out, doesn't get a lot of help. Like, let's face it, like in that offense around him, they could have done a much better job of getting him some pieces to have a little bit more success in his rookie season, but doesn't have the best rookie year. I think what you saw a little bit on film was better, let's say, than what some of the stats and some of the results ended up being. So he flashed. There's some hope, especially when you factor in now everything that they've done this offseason. The change in coaching staff, bringing in Brian Daboll, which I think is an upgraded offensive coordinator there, and then actually going out and getting him some weapons and Carnell Tate, a first round receiver, and Wandell Robinson, who is somebody that I personally like and I think is going to be a solid number two there. What do you think about Ward? Could he be that guy? Maybe he doesn't quite have the rushing production of these other guys, but could he be that guy that ends up being a much better fantasy asset than people think?
I think he has more mobility than what he showed off last year. Like, I think that's part of the allure. Now, we've said that before with other quarterbacks and fans, like Justin Herbert, for instance, where, you know, we like if you looked at him side by side with like Josh Allen, you're like, why can't Justin Herbert do what Josh Allen's doing? And obviously, you know, Josh Allen just plays the game in a much different way and uses his athletic ability in a different way. The thing with Daboll, though, is pretty interesting because he coached Josh Allen. He coached Jackson Dart. Like, there's some parallels with what they do on the ground to what Cam Ward might be able to do and unlocking that and using that a little bit more. I love the Carnell Tate match with Cam Ward. I like Carnell Tate match with Wandell too. I mean, it makes sense just intuitively that he's a down the field perimeter receiver who's going to unlock a lot for that offense. And Cam Ward, obviously a big armed quarterback, but you know, I think the difference between Shuck and Ward is number one. We've seen, I like the environment for Shuck more. You know, the mobility was there for Shuck last year. Like, we at least saw it happen, right? So and then on top of that, like, the passing numbers for Shuck were better than what we saw from Cam Ward, where if you look at history and you look at the kind of passing numbers that came, like, I understand the environment was bad. I understand the weapons weren't there. But objectively, if you just look at the data, Cam Ward and the probability of him becoming something significant, it's just really, really low based on what he did year one. I'm willing to give it an give him somewhat of an excuse and just and let it slide to a degree. But I still have that in the back of my head. And that's why I think, you know, he deserves to be ranked below a Tyler Shuck at this point for fantasy football this year. But I recognize the upside. I think that he's an interesting later round dart. And then again, going back to like super flex stuff, I do think that he's not at risk of like losing his job this year, right? Like, they're going to give him the year to see what they have in him. And that's always a risk when you're looking at guys who are ranked in the low end QB2 range, is like, all right, well, is this guy good enough to hold on to that gig all year? Cause in super flex, when you lose that quarterback because he lost his job, it's bad news. It's not fun.
Well, it doesn't seem like fantasy managers are really taking notice of the Ward potential breakout here. I did write up my quarterback breakouts earlier in the week. I got a couple comments on it saying, where's Cam Ward? Because I didn't include him in there. But we ran a poll this week and we put, you know, who could be the next Drake May? And Ward only getting 13% of the vote compared to, you know, the other sophomore QBs there, 32% for Dart, 27% for Tyler Shuck. So Ward definitely trailing there. And I wonder too, it's just after what we saw last year, he doesn't seem like as exciting of a fantasy option. And with the kind of not as high of a rushing ceiling there as well, I wonder what his overall fantasy ceiling is. And does he just kind of project more as a QB2 that would need a lot of things to go his way in order to land in the low end QB1 ranks versus some of these other guys that, you know, the rushing production, I think, could push them right up there. That's where it is to me, but I will say I really like this group. I don't know if there's anyone here that you want to throw in as a potential finalist already, JJ, in terms of the Drake May. We normally pick three guys to put as finalists before we make our decision in the end. To me, Jackson Dart, as long as we're allowing the QB12 in there, I think he makes sense. And to me, I think Tyler Shuck also makes sense.
Yeah, you know, there's some other guys that are being drafted late, but other guys that we talked about there, you know, I think Dart and Shuck would be the obvious one, and I'd probably go, you know, if you, yes, those two would be the two that like fit the Drake May mold best. Yes,
we'll put them in pencil for now, and we will revisit it after we talk about some of these other guys. But we got to take another break here. When we come back, we're going to run through some of the deeper late round quarterback options as we try to find this year's Drake May for your fantasy teams. Lots more coming up, so stick around. All right, we are back. JJ, I got six more quarterbacks that I want to talk about here. And like I said earlier, I don't think one of them actually qualifies for this, but I don't think we could have done this episode without bringing him up as a potential late round guy, because he's somebody that I've already drafted a bunch and I think has a chance to really have a great season. And that is Kyler Murray. I never really thought that I would be someone on the Kyler Murray bandwagon based on what I said about JJ McCarthy earlier. Maybe this is another mistake and I'm believing too much in Kevin O'Connell and that Minnesota environment and what could actually happen there. But I did mention before that, you know, the veterans that they've had come in have done quite well in that offense. McCarthy didn't have that experience. Maybe that's one thing that really worked against him. But Kyler going off the board is the QB 17. The other guy in this tier in terms of quarterbacks who are on new teams, who have a lot of rushing upside, the other guy would be Malik Willis on the Dolphins. He's going off the board as the QB 21. Let's start with Willis because of what I said about Kyler. Let's push him to the side for a second. Willis definitely fits the bill here of stepping up and being a great fantasy option, but he is so unproven. We've seen him have some pretty decent starts, especially for fantasy when he was in relief duty for the Packers over the last couple of years. Miami not doing him any favors with that receiving core, though. It looks very, very rough, and you already worry about the volume in the passing game. You worry about, can he be really an efficient, quality passer? Is there enough to get behind him as a potential fantasy breakout when so much of it is just on the rushing?
I'm going to say yes. I think that maybe this is controversial, but I think in a single quarterback league, and in your typical home league, in your typical office league, where making up for a mistake at quarterback is not the most difficult thing in the world. You know, I do a podcast during the season called Living the Stream, and we have been keeping track of our quarterback Frankenstein for over a decade. And it's gotten harder to stream because the market's gotten smarter and we have more of these unicorns, you know, in the player pool at quarterback. And so, but even still, you know, back in 2015, 2016, we were streaming to like the QB5, QB6 in points per game. Like it was that easy to get guys off the waiver wire. Nowadays, it's like low-end QB1 territory, okay? But we also don't have the benefit of picking up a player in a given week, and if he hits, then we can just use that guy the rest of the season. We're picking guys who are, you know, under like the 30% range or so over on Yahoo to be able to use as part of our Frankenstein. And so with Malik Willis, I would argue there is no better season-long single quarterback click right now than Malik Willis because of the upside. Like, yes, situationally, horrific. The wide receivers there are, I mean, it's crazy that this is their room, right? But it's also crazy how broken fantasy football is in the way that we score it, right? He's had four starts with 15 or more pass attempts, and two of them he had 20 or more. In those two games where he had 20 or more pass attempts, he scored 25 and 31 fantasy points. Now, that was in Green Bay. That's in a good offense, an offense that consistently ranks in the top half of the league in touchdowns per game and way better weapons than what he's going to have here. But I don't see why we wouldn't throw that dart and just chase the upside. And if you're in a league where you know there's not going to be quarterbacks available, you know, on the waiver wire, I think it's fine to draft two quarterbacks, which is not something that I always am forced to do or always tell people to do. But we just talked about plenty of other late round quarterback options and how quarterback is so deep. I think Malik Willis is fine to throw a dart at as a QB2 option if you want to go that route. Like if you want to get Brock Purdy and then get Malik Willis, that's fine, right? I just see no reason to not be a little, like at least a little bit above the market and ahead of the market on Willis when we know rushing is so important, when, you know, what he's done on the ground in his limited action tells us that there is a chance that he could be a, have a Lamar Jackson type impact on the ground, not through the air, right? In fantasy football. I'm not saying that he's going to be able to match the 7% touchdown rates that Lamar Jackson has posted because Lamar is a special, special kind of player. But what I am saying is, guys, fantasy football is broken in the way that we score this game. And Malik Willis is going to give us so much rushing production in this offense. So if he's all we're really saying is, what if he hits as a thrower, as a passer? We don't know for sure. He has such a small sample of what he's done so far. It might go south, but if it goes south, you have the backbone of streaming. You have the backbone of potentially having a, you know, a Brock Purdy type, which is certainly not a bad thing to you know, to rely on and go to. So to me, this is a very clear situation where we should be attacking it because, again, the ambiguity of Malik Willis is pushing down his cost in the market.
Yeah, hit as a passer doesn't mean he has to throw for 300 yards a game, right? Hit as a passer, right, if he's going to rush for those kind of totals, could be 200 yards a game.
201 air, right? Like is it, all we need a game. Yeah, 200 yeah, passing like yards and need, one passing touchdown. Yeah.
Doesn't need that much through the air. So, yeah, I'm intrigued for sure. And we saw, you mentioned it, you know, in some of those relief starts for the Packers, there was three actual starts that he had. He rushed for 41, 60, and 73 yards on the ground. And as you mentioned, he finished as a top seven fantasy quarterback in two of those three games. Of course, all the caveats that you throw out there, the better weapons and all that. But to be going at QB21 seems like a massive value. And I also think Kyler Murray at QB17 is just a huge value. And again, he has had success in the league, and that's why I think we're cheating by putting him on this list. I don't think he can actually be a candidate to be the next Drake May because he's already had really good fantasy seasons. If you go back before the disappointing season last year where he wasn't good in those first five games, he never even finished as a top 15 fantasy quarterback in any of those weeks. Then he gets hurt and misses the rest of the season. But prior to that, he was a top 12 fantasy quarterback on a per game basis in his first six seasons. Every single one of them, he came through like that. And to varying degrees, I think he was as high as like QB4 one year, was down, put up a couple QB12s, but I'm going to count those because for me, I count the top 12 and I'm talking about QB1 seasons. Man, he can get it done. And now we're going to put him in Minnesota with some of the weapons that they have there, with the great coaching there. And I think they're just going to be so refreshed to have a veteran under center. I mean, we saw Carson Wentz get out there and the offense look a little better last year. Now you have Kyler Murray coming in, even with the flaws that he has. I think we have to look at him as someone that could definitely finish inside the top 12 and maybe even higher.
Oh, 100%. I think Kyler Murray is one of the easiest bets right now, too, at his price. He's never been below a 4.7 point per game via rushing mark, which, again, over four is when you start to get into like more of the mobile territory. Over five is when you feel really confident about their mobility. And he's only been below five, I think, one or two times throughout his career as well. But you look at what Minnesota has done with the quarterbacks there. They've been top half of the league in EPA per dropback basically every year that Kevin O'Connell's been there outside of last year. It was just last year. It was just a bad, yep, you know, season. And I do wonder, you know, obviously they wouldn't be changing quarterback if they had a good year at quarterback last season. But I do wonder what that's doing for Kyler Murray within the fantasy football market. Like what JJ McCarthy's really bad season and them not having a good season through the air, how that's really impacting Kyler. And I think it's impacting him negatively. You know, I don't think that people are viewing the Kevin O'Connell and the system in general the way that they probably should be. And so all of that combined to me makes him a pretty obvious pick.
And not that I have made excuses for what happened with that quarterback room last year, but there was also a lot of injuries on that offensive line for the Vikings. So hopefully a little better injury luck there. And all of a sudden, we could see that offense really rebound and Kyler have a great season. We also have a couple quarterbacks from the 2023 class that we should talk about here. And they're really entering like make or break seasons when we're talking about CJ Stroud, whose ADP right now is QB 24, and then Bryce Young, QB 26. And for Stroud, it has been a minute since that pretty dynamite rookie season that he had in fantasy and in real life. And that's another one where we can make excuses all day about the offensive line and some of the injuries at receiver. But to me, he just hasn't looked like the same quarterback. Do you see potentially with this receiver room looking, I think, a lot better this year? Do you see a path for him to maybe get back on track?
I'll say this. I see it more than I see it with Bryce Young. At this point from a fantasy perspective. And the reason I say that, just to kind of lump them together, I did a quick query actually because I was interested, because Bryce Young's in a minus 2 point per interception league has never scored 14 points per game in a season, which is crazy because that is a very, very unbelievably replacement level type mark, right? If you look since 2011 at players who did not reach that 15 mark in their first 3 years, there's only been two quarterbacks who overcame that to score 17 points per game later on in their career. It was Geno Smith and Sam Darnold. And neither of them, you know, aside from Darnold, I guess, you know, in the Minnesota year, have been like dominant fantasy forces, right? I just am, and that's only two guys out of many that would qualify for this, right? And so I'm concerned about Young, even though they have the weapons around him. I think, you know, I'm a big Jalen Coker guy. I think T-Mac had an unbelievable rookie year. The line should be good. Like, the situation's not bad. And I like Canales, too. It's just that I don't know if Bryce Young is ever going to get there. Whereas at least CJ Stroud has shown us that there was something there at one point, you know, and I would argue weaponry-wise, just as good, if not better, in Houston right now. The line is really the biggest question mark, I think, with Stroud. And if we do see some improvement from that offensive line, which, if we're being real, kind of hard for it to be much worse than it's been over the last year and a half, 2 years for Stroud. So if we do see that improvement, I could see a scenario where Stroud's like QB 16 or something, you know, where he's at least usable from that perspective. It's just, it's a lot more difficult for me to see it with Bryce Young, just given the way that he started his career.
And one of the excuses we could go back to for Stroud is his buddy Tank Dell getting hurt. Really, you know, catastrophic injury that he had. He's trying to come back from that. He's back out there on the practice field. There's a chance that he can get back into the offense this year. But even if he can't, right? Like, you have Nico Collins, you have Jaden Higgins, you have Jalen Noel, who I think could be a really good player in that offense as well. Competent veteran tight end in Dalton Schultz. David Montgomery arriving there is, I think, huge for them after everything that happened with Joe Mixon and that running back room really not giving them that much last year. So I think all of that for sure points me in the same direction, that I would rather have Stroud. But we're getting to the point now where we've seen enough of these guys over the last couple seasons where it's very concerning from a real life and from a fantasy standpoint. And you start to wonder, like, will we actually see them reach the heights that we had hoped when they were coming out, that their team certainly hoped when they were coming out? And I think with Stroud after that rookie season, you think back to like how he was valued in Dynasty, JJ, like he was just cranked right up, and he has fallen way back down, unfortunately, after that. So it's a tough situation. I don't think either of these guys, to me, really belong as finalists in this conversation, but they're at least interesting to talk about, and I think they could be good super flex options for sure here. But that is going to do it for us in the Yahoo Sports Network. We're going to continue this conversation after a quick break here. And we are back to wrap things up with our buddy JJ Zacharyson of lateround.com. And JJ, we've talked about a bunch of great late round options who could be that next Drake May. There's two more guys that I want to mention. And in part, this is because if you think back to last year around this time, a couple rookies, Jackson Dart and Tyler Shuck, for a variety of reasons. I mean, for Dart, it was that he wasn't the starter. Russell Wilson was. I think we very quickly forget that based on how Dart played and his kind of personality took over that team and changed the culture there a little bit throughout the season. Tyler Shuck, I don't know if we had high hopes going into the year, but he eventually took over as starter as well. Those guys were going so late in drafts, really out of the conversation in redraft, and ended up factoring in, especially in the second half of the season. Could we see any of the rookies this year do that? The two guys that I'm looking at are Fernando Mendoza, of course, the number one overall pick, goes to the Raiders. He's going off the board. His ADP is QB 27. And then the other one, and I don't love this guy as a prospect, but Carson Beck ending up in Arizona. We've seen Jacoby Brissett, and he hasn't been with the team. You know, he's returning now. He's unhappy with the contract. You really figure that at some point this season, Carson Beck is probably going to get a chance to start so they can see what they have in him. And with the weapons that they have there, maybe we could see him have like a Tyler Shuck style finish to the season where we see him produce a little bit better. Anything about these two guys that you think needs to be mentioned? Do they deserve to be in the conversation as a potential Drake May this year? Or are we really reaching at this point?
I'd be shocked if they were, you know, players that we're even relying on, to be honest with you, down the stretch, like in a really significant way. I think Mendoza is interesting just because, you know, you have Kubiak there who did what he did with the Seattle offense last season, and really, you know, he's been a strong coordinator and an offensive coach, you know, over the last handful of stops that he's had in general. And obviously, you know, you have Brock Bowers and you have some questionable wide receivers, but there's, you know, Ashton Gentry back there. I think we're going to see a lot of 12 personnel from the Raiders offense in general. But yeah, I mean, like maybe there's something to Mendoza down the stretch. The thing with Beck that, you know, I do think there is sort of that like parallel to Chuck is that you have a really experienced a quarterback from a collegiate standpoint that would be stepping in, you know, halfway through the year or whenever that were to happen. And, you know, while I don't know if for sure we're going to see the same type of system and environment that is so fantasy friendly as what we've seen with Kellen Moore, it's at least a different one in Arizona where there's some ambiguity and there's really good weapons there. So maybe he's a little bit better than we expect. Obviously, if you're drafting, I don't think it's necessary to go after those guys. Even in super flex leagues, I would say go after them only if you have relatively decent deep benches, you know, from just a size perspective, just because you don't want to be holding on, especially a Beck, right? Like, I think that we feel pretty good about Mendoza getting a start at some point. Beck is still somewhat up in the air. Like, it's just not as concrete. And so, you know, you don't want to have to be holding on to these players throughout the entire season when waivers are going on and you're not able to, you know, you don't know who to drop and stuff. They might be one of the first players you end up dropping if you're in a league with a shallower bench. So at least think of it that way too. Obviously in a single quarterback league, you don't really have to go after them.
Yeah, I feel the exact same way. And I last year wrote our waiver wire column. I hope to do it again this season. I expect that I'll be writing about these guys at some point throughout the year, but I'm definitely not drafting them anywhere in redraft. I don't think you really need to worry too much about it. I think you broke that down nicely. So we are not going to put them in the conversation here. We can't get to the finalists though, JJ, and it might have been fairly obvious on the first two. I think we're looking probably at Jackson Dart as one of them, Tyler Shuck as the other. Would you agree?
Yeah, I'd say so.
All right. And then that third spot is the one that is kind of up for grabs. I think based on the way we were both talking about him, probably Malik Willis.
Yeah, I mean, obviously a different kind of archetype than May. Like, I think the other guys like fit it a little bit better, but the upside's crazy. If things were to hit, and that's all I care about when I'm drafting a QB 21.
All right. Well, you are the guest here, sir. I'm going to put the ball in your court. I think Dart and Chuck seem a little bit higher than Willis if we are going to rank them, but rank them and let us know who would be your choice here to be that guy, to be the next Drake May in 2026.
I would say that it's likely Dart, Chuck. I'm going to say Tyler Shuck is my dude for this year's Drake May. That's how I'm going to end it. It's going to be Tyler Shuck.
I knew you were going to say that. I think personally, I'd probably slightly lean towards Dart, but based on how we've talked about Tyler Shuck over the last like 6 months on this show, I think it makes complete sense for him to actually be the guy. And I think if Harmon was here, he would probably be making the same arguments that you did. And he would probably want to take Tyler Shuck as that guy too. And I think in terms of the value you're getting, where you're getting him in drafts and where he could actually end up, there could be a much bigger jump than what we might see from Dart in my mind. So yes, Tyler Shuck, I am with you. We're going to award it to him. I think that's very exciting. I think he is headed for a great year. And I think in general, that Saints offense seems like people are coming around and really jumping on board, but I think there's still a lot of value in that Saints offense. We could see a lot of quality fantasy weeks from them. So that is very exciting. And JJ, it's always exciting to do the show with you, man. It was sad that we took like a year and a half off of being able to share the mic together, though we did get that chance to see each other in person. So that sort of made up for it a little, but thanks for doing this, man. Always appreciate chatting with you.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me. Greatly appreciate it.
Yeah, and let everybody know anything new going on over at lateround.com. I know you got a beautiful new website over there. I don't know if you want to talk about that at all or anything that you're working on, content, the podcast, just so much stuff. So many irons in the fire over there.
So much stuff. Yeah, we got a new website, lateround.com. Check that out for sure. New like members hub and such. I'm working on a draft guide that's going to be out in early July. If you're into like game theory stuff and strategy, that's what the guide is really, really focused on. It's helping you make better decisions, not just handing you a sheet and saying, go for it. So there's that. And then the Late Round Podcast. In the podcast feed, you get bite-sized episodes early in the week, but then there's also conversational episodes. There's I started up becoming a best ball bro again recently, where I'm doing a lot of best ball stuff. So yeah, check it all out, lateround.com.
Ton of great stuff. And like I said off the top, a fantastic analyst, and just a great dude. One of the best people that I've met in the industry, hands down. Before we go, though, I do have to say the all-new 2026 Soccer Pick'em is here just in time for the world's biggest soccer tournament. Make picks each round, earn points, and climb the leaderboard. Play solo, create a private group with friends, join a public group to play with other fans, or even join our Yahoo Sports group to see if you can beat us. You can join at yahoofantasy.com/soccerpick'em. I have entered my picks in there. I will not be surprised if you beat me. I'm extremely competitive, but this is one spot where I don't have a ton of expertise. Still, it is so much fun to play, so go do that. Also, a reminder, we are one pod a week through mid-July. Pods are going to hit your feed on Wednesday afternoon. Harmon is sipping drinks on a beach somewhere. Boon June is going to continue, but until next time, we are out.